Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om 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 Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we will read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, verse 16. Very important verse in a very important chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam. Shushrusho Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Kata Ruchi Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirtha Nishevanat. Translation. O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned life of a living being is caused by his revolting against the Lord. There are men called devas, or godly living beings, and there are men called asuras, or demons, who are against the authority of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 16th chapter, a vivid description of the asuras is given, in which it is said that the asuras are put into lower and lower states of ignorance, life after life, and so sink to the lower animal forms, and have no information of the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. These asuras are gradually rectified to God consciousness by the mercy of the Lord's liberated servitors in different countries according to the supreme will. Such devotees of the Lord are very confidential associates of the Lord, and when they come to save human society from the dangers of godlessness, they are known as the powerful incarnations of the Lord, as sons of the Lord, as servants of the Lord, or as associates of the Lord. But none of them falsely claim to be God themselves. This is a blasphemy declared by the asuras, and the demoniac followers of such asuras also accept pretenders as God or his incarnation. In the revealed scriptures, there's definite information of the incarnation of God. No one should be accepted as God or an incarnation of God unless he is confirmed by the revealed scriptures. The servants of God are to be respected as God by the devotees who actually want to go back to Godhead. Such servants of God are called Mahatmas or Tirthas, and they preach according to particular time and place. The servants of God urge people to become devotees of the Lord. They never tolerate being called God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God himself, according to the indication of the revealed scriptures, but he played the part of a devotee. People who knew him to be God addressed him as God, but he used to block his ears with his hands and chant the name of Lord Vishnu. He strongly protested against being called God, although undoubtedly he was God himself. The Lord behaves so to warn us against unscrupulous men who take pleasure in being addressed as God. The servants of God come to propagate God consciousness, and intelligent people should cooperate with them in every respect. By serving the servant of God, one can please God more than by directly serving the Lord. The Lord is more pleased when he sees that his servants are properly respected, because such servants risk everything for the service of the Lord, and so are very dear to the Lord. The Lord declares in Bhagavad Gita 18:16 that no one is greater to him than one who risks everything to preach his glory. By serving the servants of the Lord, one gradually gets the quality of such servants, and thus one becomes qualified to hear the glories of God. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. Shushusho shradadanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahatsevaya vipra punyatyatha nishevanat. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. And Vasudev, of course, is Krishna. Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niravishesha Shunyavadi Paschityadesha Tarane. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So this is a very, very important verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. You may have heard classes on it before, perhaps. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, there's certain verses which are really very critically important, and they get talked about and quoted also regularly. And this is such a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, because here in Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the second chapter, and well, we see in Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter is titled The Contents of the Gita Summarized. And that's what it is, actually. As you read through the Gita, you see that, after the second chapter, you see that it is going deeper into subjects, in so many cases at least, which have already been introduced in the second chapter. So the essence of the Gita is there, you could say, in the second chapter. And similarly here in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, the essence of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is stated very clearly and in a very systematic way. This is one of the earlier verses. There are verses before it, though, which begin in an even more introductory way to the general subject. And this verse is now bringing out a very critical point for a devotee who wants to really advance in Krishna consciousness and really get from Krishna consciousness what it has to offer. So anyway, the second chapter is introductory like that. And the whole message of Srimad Bhagavatam basically is encapsulated there in this second chapter. So, this verse then is dealing with describing a devotee on a particular level in Krishna consciousness and describing how the devotee can come to the next level and higher levels, progress in Krishna consciousness by doing a very specific thing. In Krishna consciousness, well, yesterday we did a program at the Wits University. We just cooked some halva. We did a cooking demonstration. Yes. And but then afterwards we answered some questions, actually. So yes. One person asked, is Krishna consciousness a religion? And basically the answer we gave was that no, it is certainly not a religion in the sense that the term is used generally in society and how people conceive of religion. But this is a spiritual science for systematic personal development, personal spiritual development, and for step-by-step developing or reawakening your relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what Krishna consciousness is. If you look in a dictionary, you'll find in many dictionaries it says religion, you know, then gives the definition, a system of belief. So in Krishna consciousness, of course the element of faith is there. But Krishna consciousness is not just a system of belief. Faith is there. Faith is there in practically everything. When you eat a meal, you have faith that there's nothing in there which is going to make you sick. And sometimes there will be. These things happen. Yes. So it's a matter of faith. But that doesn't mean that now eating is a religion. When you go to work, you know, you may have noticed, I don't know if you will have thought of it, but they never pay you at the beginning, in advance. They only pay you at the end. When you are in banking, if you're involved in banking, if you're making like monthly payments on something, you can choose that your payments come out at the beginning of the month or the end of the month. You can choose. And the amount will be slightly different, depending on whether it's the beginning or the end, because if it's the end, there's a little more interest involved. But when it comes to working, at least generally, you don't get paid at the beginning of the month, and then they just have faith that you're going to work for the rest of the month. But you work for the whole month, and you have faith that they're going to pay you. And the fact is, sometimes they don't. Yeah. Sometimes they don't. I go to Russia a lot, and when I was first going there, the whole Russian economic system and just the whole of Russia was upside down. And many people, really, a substantial percentage of the population, they were all working, but were not being paid. They were just so used to being looked after in the communist system that they were just carrying on, you know, on automatic pilot practically. And in some businesses, the boss would just give them food. He would just give them food. And in other places, he would give them, if it was a factory, give them some of the things the factory produced. so they could sell them to make money. So you might think that when we say that, you know, you go to work and they pay you at the end of the month, and it is an act of faith on your part that you work without being paid till the end of the month, you might think, well, it's not really like that because, you know you're going to get paid, of course. But it is not just like an axiomatic truth at all. Yes, it's an act of faith, actually. But that doesn't mean that working is a religion. I mean, after all, what is work about? It's only about getting money, really. Unless you're one of these fanatics who's just attached to a certain type of work because it gratifies your senses. Just doing the activity. No, it's basically a matter of getting money. That's all there is to it for you. But that doesn't mean that work is a religion. So the fact that in Krishna consciousness the element of faith is there, does not mean that now it is defined as a religion, because faith is involved. Because in Krishna consciousness, well, like we said, it's a systematic, scientific process for personal spiritual development. And if one applies oneself to the process nicely, then one finds, in very practical and straightforward terms, that one is actually developing spiritually. It's just a reality. And this point is made at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, well, in the 11th canto, actually, of Srimad Bhagavatam, that progress in spiritual life is something like what happens in the process of eating. That when you eat, first of all, your hunger is dealt with. Your hunger goes. That's the first thing. And then a second thing is, you enjoy it. You enjoy it. And a third thing is, you get strength. You get strength. And it is not really, you know, it's really got nothing to do with religion or anything like that. It's just a simple objective reality that everybody has experienced many times, many, many times. This is what happens when you eat. So similarly, as you progress in Krishna consciousness, your hunger, or in terms of spiritual life, your anxieties, your difficulties, and so on like that, which were there because of having been in material existence, compared to the hunger that you feel uncomfortable because you're hungry. So your anxieties, etc., from being in material life, when you take up Krishna consciousness nicely, they are dealt with. They go. And then secondly, you find that as you engage nicely, seriously in Krishna consciousness, you become very happy. Become very happy. And thirdly, as you're practicing nicely and you're making progress, you become spiritually stronger. And things which previously would have challenged you strongly, like, for example, for many people, following the regulative principles. For many people, you know, at least one or maybe two, in some cases all, of the regulative principles, to actually follow them nicely is a challenge. And some people fail, actually. But if you practice Krishna consciousness nicely, then you become strong. And following the regulative principles, it just becomes natural, and it's not some sort of issue, how to do it, I must do it, I should. You know, it just becomes an understood part of one's life through making progress in devotional service. So this is an example given in the 11th canto, if I remember correctly, by Lord Krishna himself. Anyway, in the Bhagavatam it's given. And it's very appropriate that when you're eating, you don't need someone there to evaluate you. Are you now? Haha. You are not feeling so hungry. You're only feeling half hungry now. You're making progress. And now, oh, now you're feeling it tastes good. Now you're feeling stronger. You can do some things. No, you don't need that. You know it. It's simply, these are just objective realities. And it's not like, I believe I am not feeling so hungry. So Krishna consciousness is like this. It's a progressive path and of personal spiritual development, which is objectively verifiable and understandable by the practitioner. And it's not, you know, some sort of spiritual rocket science or, you know, something very difficult to figure out. Am I making some progress? Am I benefiting? Am I developing? So there are stages. There are stages. Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives 9 stages from the beginning to the perfection. And you can find it, it's there in Nectar of Devotion, which is Prabhupada's translation of and summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya Tato Narta Nivritisyat Tato Nishta Ruchis Tata Ata Saktis Tato Bhava Tata Prema Abhyudanchati Sadhakana Mayam Premna Pradu Bhave Bhavet Krama. This very last word, krama, means step. So the idea is step by step, one goes through the sequence of the of those stages, and of course, within each stage, there are also sub-stages. So step by step, gradually, one progresses. So now, in the second chapter then, of Srimad Bhagavatam, the same concept is being given, being utilized, to describe the progress of a devotee in devotional service, to describe what the Bhagavatam is about, again remembering that it's a type of a summary of the whole book. And what is the subject matter of the whole book? Well, Krishna is God and we are his servants. And, you know, Krishna's already God. He's already properly situated. We don't need to worry about Krishna. But we, even though we are Krishna's servants, currently we are not situated very well as such. Of course, we're all trying to be devotees, but we're still in the trying stage. We have not reached the solid position of being completely, that's it, we're now situated there. Step by step, we're progressing, trying to progress in devotional service. So the subject matter of the Bhagavatam is Krishna and us coming to Krishna through devotional service. And the second chapter is examining the process of devotional service in terms of these different stages. This verse is describing more or less, the stage of bhajana kriya. Well, let us just describe the stages. Ado shraddha, first of all, some faith. Faith, in this context, it means that one meets devotees, one has some contact with Krishna consciousness, and one's dormant Krishna consciousness gets a little stimulated, and on that basis you think, oh, this looks interesting. Let me go and find out. That level of faith, not like some strong faith that we'll do anything for Krishna because we know Krishna will look after us. Not that sort of faith. But just some initial faith that, yeah, okay. Let me take a little step further. Let me just have a little look here. That type of faith, as opposed to thinking that, what a waste of time, I'm not going to bother. I'll just do something else. So Ado Shraddha, first of all, there's faith, that very initial faith, which then brings one to Sadhu Sangha, associating with the devotees. Let me go and see what it's about. Let me visit the place. Let me go and visit ISKCON Santon and see what these people are up to. So then you go, and there are the devotees you associate. And then third stage, this is the third stage of nine, bhajana kriya, associating with the devotees and seeing, wow, look at this devotee. Wow, he's really nice. Sure, he's really happy. And they're all very happy. And I mean, let's hope they're all very happy. Sometimes one or two may have some problems, but no, I mean, they're really nice, and they're nice people, they're nice to me, and they're happy, and wow, you know, I think I should get into this. Let me give it a good try. This is bhajana kriya, which literally means performing the activities of devotional service. In other words, you decide, I'm going to become a devotee. Based on the association and the inspiration that you got from the association, which was the second stage. So now, third stage, bhajana kriya, and Prabhupada, that's what this verse is talking about. Let me just read it again. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. So this verse is talking about bhajana kriya because it is talking about serving. When we talk about the activities of devotional service, what are they? It's devotional service. Serving. Yeah. So this verse is saying that you must serve. But you must serve the devotees, and particularly the devotees who are freed from vice, means particularly the advanced devotees or the spiritual master, particularly. Yes, you must serve the spiritual master and the other devotees. But amongst the devotees in general, the spiritual master is more prominent and more important. So Prabhupada would, when talking about Bhajana Kriya, Prabhupada on a number of occasions would say that Bhajana Kriya essentially means coming to that point of commitment to devotional service, which is really embodied in the act of becoming initiated. Because initiation means you take vows that I'm going to be a devotee. That's what I'm going to do. It's going to be my main program in life. You know, I may work, I may have a family and, you know, things like that. But actually, I can see devotional service is the main thing in life. So I'm going to do it. And that means taking those vows, making those commitments. That's there in initiation. So Prabhupada put it like that on a number of occasions. Bhajana Kriya, regular engagement in devotional service, commitment to engagement in devotional service, means becoming initiated, taking those vows, and focusing like that. And then, just to briefly mention the other stages, once one is committed to devotional service and seriously engaged, and not just sort of checking it out to see, you know, what is it? Is it for me? Then, once you're committed and actively engaged, then you come to the fourth stage of anatha nivritti, clearing out all the bad habits, misconceptions, doubts, attachment to other things, which are there within your heart due to being in material existence for a long time. And then when you go through anatha nivritti, when your heart is cleansed to at least some reasonable degree, then you come to the level of nishtha, the fifth of nine. In other words, we're now, in a certain sense, crossing over the halfway mark. Nishtha, being fixed in devotional service, steady, not up and down, you know, good days, bad days, other days, and, etc. But actually fixed, stable, very stable in devotional service, and not wavering in the face of challenges and different types of obstacles, problems, etc. Then, when one is fixed, then Krishna consciousness becomes much easier. First of all, you've got to become Krishna conscious. You know, at least get the rudiments, the rudimentary things down. And then away you go in Krishna consciousness. It becomes much, much easier when the devotee has come to the level of nishtha. Next stage is ruchi, getting a wonderful taste, wonderful experience of pleasure in one's devotional service. Then asakti, on the basis of that taste, Krishna consciousness is so nice. We don't want anything else. If anything else gets in the way, we reject it spontaneously and naturally. A great attachment. This is all I want. I don't want anything else. I reject anything else. That's the seventh of nine stages. When a devotee comes to that point and is really fixed on the level of asakti, that is the end of the, you could say, practicing stage. practicing and just cultivating and developing stage. The next stage after that, the eighth stage, bhava, is perfection. Perfection. Nothing more really to learn in a certain sense. And no more need to practice and cultivate and, you know, deal with problems. Perfect devotional service, pure devotional service, the level of bhava. And then the final stage is prema, which is like the most perfect. Bhava is already perfect, but prema is, actually bhava is prema, but just a small amount. Whereas prema is vast. So bhava is the same thing. It's not another thing. And then you develop prema. It's just the quantity. The difference in quantity is so great that the stages are distinguished from each other. Yeah. So anyway, to get back to the verse, this verse is about bhajana kriya. Coming to the point of really engaging in devotional service. How? By serving the devotees who are completely freed from vice. And particularly the spiritual master. And you see, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about mainly very advanced devotees who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and who save people. Not just your sort of quote-unquote average typical devotee who's hanging in there somewhere. But Prabhupada says the Mahatmas, the Tirthas. Tirtha means, of course, a holy place. Those devotees who have advanced to that point that they have become like holy places themselves. Wherever they go, become sanctified by their presence. Those types of devotees. And the verse does say, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice. Yeah. So by practicing Krishna consciousness in that way, serving very advanced devotees, serving Srila Prabhupada, serving the spiritual master, then what the verse says is, by that service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. In the process of devotional service, now referring to not just the stages, but the practical activities which make up the way of life of devotional service. What is the first activity given by Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto? One of the most famous verses.
Hearing.
Huh?
Hearing.
Okay, what's the verse? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Achanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. It's Prahlad Maharaj from the seventh canto. First is Shravanam, hearing. Then once you've heard, then you can chant. And once you've heard and chanted, then you can remember. You know, if you never heard about it, how are you going to chant about it? If you never heard about it, how are you going to remember it? You never heard about it. So you have to hear first. And then you become stimulated to serve and engage in the other ways. Worship, offer prayers. If you never heard about Krishna, why on earth would you want to offer prayers to him? How could you, if you never heard about him? So you see, it begins with hearing. It begins with hearing. And it begins with hearing, and all the other processes, the other eight, the chanting, the remembering, etc., etc., all the other eight, they can only develop when the hearing is there nicely. It's like, how can you drive to Durban if you don't get in the motor car or in the vehicle? You just say, no, I'm just going to Durban anyway. So if you don't begin the process, how can you complete the process or make any advancement in the process if you don't begin? So you have to hear, first of all. And this is what this verse is saying. That now, here you are beginning, Bhajana Kriya, you are beginning serious engagement by taking up service to the advanced devotees, or particularly the spiritual master. So you have to cultivate your hearing. Now the interesting point is that the verse says that by that service, by serving the spiritual master, the advanced devotees, by serving Srila Prabhupada, one gains an affinity for hearing. One just finds, that's nice. Well, that's very interesting. Whereas previously you might have thought, yeah, it's so much philosophy, and you know, prasadams at the end, so I'll just tolerate it, and because you know, prasadams at the end, and that's important. But if one renders service nicely, on the level of Bhajana Kriya, seriously committed, then one finds that, I'm developing an affinity. Look at that. I'm sitting in the Bhagavatam class, and I'm thinking, wow, that's nice. That's interesting. That's good. One gains an affinity. Now, how is it? How is it that rendering service to the advanced devotees, that through that you get an affinity, an attraction arises? Not that you have to bash yourself over on the head, I must listen, whether I want to or not. But you find that, I'm becoming attracted. How is it? What is sort of the mechanics that something, you're doing something and this result of becoming attracted is the result? So the thing is, if you serve the devotees, you get the attraction. But it's a little different. It's a little different from, for example, we were talking about eating. You feel, you're feeling hungry. You're not comfortable. You're really feeling hungry. I mean, I know in Krishna consciousness, it's extremely unusual that you feel so hungry that you really feel uncomfortable. The main problem in that regard is too much prasada, not too little. But anyway, just for argument's sake, you are in a condition of being uncomfortably hungry, and then you start eating, and then your hunger is overcome. And it is very clear how that result came. It's obvious. You are hungry because you didn't eat, so then you eat, and then you're not hungry. It's obvious. But here, you serve the devotees and you get an attraction for hearing about Krishna. How did it come? See, there is a missing link. There's a missing link, which Prabhupada mentions here. And in the next purport, also Prabhupada makes the same point. That the servants of God, these people who are being referred to here, who spread Krishna consciousness and so on. The servants of God come to propagate God consciousness, and intelligent people should cooperate with them in every respect. By serving the servant of God, one can please God more than by directly serving the Lord. The Lord is more pleased when he sees that his servants are properly respected, because such servants risk everything for the service of the Lord and so are very dear to the Lord. So if we serve the devotees, what happens is Krishna becomes pleased. Krishna becomes most pleased. You know, different things please Krishna to different degrees. Serving the devotees pleases Krishna the most. Jiva Goswami makes the point in Bhakti Sandarbha that serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love of God than trying to develop love of God. Yes. So the thing is, if we serve the devotees, Krishna becomes very pleased, and Krishna gives his mercy. And now, what is that mercy? What is it? What does it look like? That mercy is, Krishna gives you an attraction for hearing about him. In your heart, suddenly you find, oh, that's nice. And you didn't have to force yourself, or trick yourself, or bribe yourself. No, you just found, an attraction is arising. This is coming by the grace of the Lord. When he becomes pleased with you, when he sees that you're serving his devotees. Then a second point, which is also very important, and it's here in the purport as well. By serving the servants of the Lord, one gradually gets the quality of such servants. And thus one becomes qualified to hear the glories of the Lord. So it's a point of association that if you associate, whoever you associate with, you become like them. Or most particularly, it's a little slightly more subtle than that. Whoever's association you accept, whoever's influence, this means, you accept, whoever you become influenced by, you'll become like them. Yes. So, there's a saying, if you associate with thieves, you become a thief. You know, this does not necessarily mean, though, that every policeman is going to become a thief. Because they associate, don't say too much about that, but at least in principle, they're associating with thieves more than anyone, maybe on a daily basis. But the thing is, you know, but they, you know, Hare Krishna, they remain, you know, upright, moral people and the protectors of the citizens against the thieves. In some countries. Maybe. So you get the idea. But if they accept the association of the thieves, if the thieves say, hey, you know, how much are you getting paid a month? You know, 5,000 rands? Come join us. We'll give you 10. All you do is, when the people phone in and say there's a thief in the house, just say, fine, we'll be right there and don't come. And don't tell anyone. So we can get away and we'll pay you. See, this is accepting association. That you become influenced by the values, the ideas of the person you're associating with. Yeah, it's not just that you happen to be in the company of the person. Because what is preaching? What is book distribution? Preaching. It means you have to go out, you have to contact the people. And they're all in this deeply materialistic condition of different varieties. And you've got to go out and all day meet hundreds. We used to say when we were distributing books in England, 100 a day keeps Maya away. So to do 100 a day, you have to meet 100 people. But not everyone's going to take a book. So you may have to meet 200. You may have to meet 300. You know, it's a lot of people. You've got to meet a lot of people. But the thing is, as preachers, we're not accepting their association, meaning becoming influenced by them, listening to them, what do you think about life? You know, oh, okay. And then they tell us what they think, and we go, oh, yeah, that's good. You know, maybe I should do that. No, we are giving them our association, and we are not accepting their association at all. But even so, devotees need to take a little break sometimes, because even simply standing in the proximity of people like that, you know, there's energy. Everyone emits a certain type of energy, and it can influence the devotees just by looking at them. Anyway, we won't go into all the details of that, but I think you can appreciate the principles involved. Yes. So, if we associate with these devotees, particularly with these special devotees, the Mahatmas, the Tirthas, particularly with them, actually with any sincere devotee, but particularly the more we associate with more advanced devotees, the more beneficial it is. So, through that association and through hearing from them, listening to them, observing them, in these ways, making contact with them and becoming influenced by them, we become like them. What does becoming like them mean? Well, it means many things. You know, it means we become enlivened in devotional service in many ways. But particularly, the fundamental sort of qualification or hallmark characteristic of those very advanced devotees is they love to hear about Krishna. They love to hear about Krishna. And you pick that up. So through the association of those advanced devotees, you pick up that qualification of becoming attracted to hearing. So two points. One is the mercy of the Lord. He gives you the attraction because he's so pleased with you. And he wants to give you something to really reciprocate, because you're pleasing him so much. And he doesn't just think, yes, well, I'm God, everyone should serve me, and if they do, you know, it's just right. But Krishna appreciates it. And Krishna feels, oh, they're serving me so much, I must reciprocate. They're serving my devotees so nicely. Oh, I want to express my appreciation. So Krishna gives the attraction, plus we associate with those devotees and we pick it up from their association in a natural way. And then when you pick that up, when you get that attraction, hearing about Krishna is so powerful, so purifying, that it is the main part of what cleanses out the anathas, anatha nivritti, cleansing out the anathas, based on, not exclusively, but based on hearing about Krishna very nicely. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Some words of wisdom from our co-national secretary, Govardhan Prabhu. Give some realization or something, if you'd like.
Guru Maharaj, yesterday you were speaking about Indra is the king of heaven and he's capable of making such a serious mistake. And then we went to bed and I was thinking about in the Brahma Samhita there's a description of this insect, the lowest of creatures, Indra Gupta.
Indra Gopa, yeah.
I was wondering if there's any correlation.
Not that we're aware of. But it sounds like he is the 8,400,000th. It's an interesting point, I must admit. I've thought about it before. Indra, he's almost the number one. Almost. Brahma is number one. Brahma, Shiva, but really Brahma is number one. And then you got Shiva, you know, he's sort of in a special category of his own. Then there's Lord Vishnu, but he doesn't count because he's not a Jiva. And Shiva is normally not a Jiva. So, but next is Indra. He's the next. He's number three in the hierarchy, the king of the administrative demigods. Of course, Brahma has his associates. Shiva has his associates. But in terms of species, hierarchically, Indra is sort of like third level. Yeah. And Indragopa sounds like some unicellular amoeba. Amoebic, the lowest of the unicellulars. Any other comment or question?
Indra means king.
Yeah, Indra means king.
And Gopa?
Gopa. In this context, I'm not sure.
It's not a coward boy.
Not a coward boy.
The king of the glory.
Could be. Anyway, he's just mentioned there by Brahma. It's not necessarily that he's specifically, you know, like the actual last one. But there's no doubt at all he's way, way, way down at the bottom. Maybe he's the last one, but I've not read anything specific.
Also, Guru Maharaj, when you hear like Prahlad Maharaj explaining these nine steps of devotional service, and it's kind of very scientifically and progressive, and your mind can't stop wondering that there are other practitioners of, you know, spiritualists that are not worshipping Krishna, like in Christianity or Islam. I mean, they don't even feature on these on this rung, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, in a sense they do, but when you talk about the levels, you know, Shraddha, they have some Shraddha. Sadhu Sangha, they sort of have some Sadhu Sangha. Their sadhus are not, you know, so good, really. Bhajana Kriya, you know, they make some commitments. Some of them become monks, for example, or priests. It's a type of commitment. But Anatha Nivritti, that's where they really fall short. I mean, they fall short on the other levels too, but they really fall short on the level of Anatha Nivritti. I was just reading, you may have seen, where was it? It was in one of the GBC conferences the last couple of days, about the, I think he's just retired, Archbishop of Canterbury. The head of the, you know, the Queen is the head of the Anglican Church. Don't ask me what her qualification is. But the Archbishop of Canterbury, under the Queen, he runs the church. And he's sort of, you know, meant to be the top sadhu. But, yeah, the devotee, somebody, I think Harry, sorry. There was an interview with this, either the current or maybe just retired Archbishop of Canterbury. And he was saying, yeah, you know, sometimes I like to have a gin and tonic. Yeah. I mean, publicly saying that. You know, you must know that your audience is hopelessly unqualified. If you can tell them that I sometimes have a gin and tonic, and they continue to think that you're fine, you know, you can be the head of the whole thing. And it's just, you know, everything's just hunky-dory. So, you know, it means he has not passed through. He's not well situated in Anatha Nivritti. Yeah. Some bhajana kriyas, there's some commitment, you know, to the godly life, you know, to some degree. But in terms of getting free from anathas, they miss out, you know, almost wholesale, but at least they miss out in a very big way. And without going through Anatha Nivritti, you cannot actually reach Nishta. What to speak of Ruchi, what to speak of Asakti, and what to speak of Bhava. It's just too far out of the question. But even Nishta. So therefore we should understand, like the Muslims, or maybe we were discussing it the other night, the Muslims appear to have, and some Christians, a type of nishta, you know, focused, fixed. If anyone leaves Islam, we must kill him. Right. So, you know, it's some sort of nishta. Some sort of being fixed. But because they haven't been through Anatha Nivritti, then you must know that their nishta is deeply contaminated by material sentiments, conceptions, attitudes. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of blatantly obvious in many ways. Killing cows. And, you know, that was one of Prabhupada's, if you look it up in the folio, one of Prabhupada's great complaints about so-called Mahatma Gandhi was that Gandhi said, among many foolish, I mean really foolish things, sort of like disastrously foolish. But he said, you know, the Muslims, they have to be included in Indian society. And it's their religion to kill cows. So we should let them kill cows. Mm-hmm. And it's not an issue. Because they're Muslims. And we should be tolerant and all that. And Prabhupada really didn't appreciate that at all. Because it's such a terribly sinful activity. Talk about anatha. You know, it's not an anatha exactly. It's just blatantly sinful. Just plain sinful activity. And their zealousness to spread themselves, and the Christians too. You know, it's very, very similar. Their conviction that they're the best. It's deeply materially contaminated. Because they haven't been through enough in Navriti. They're still, they're just deeply, deeply infected with anathas.
So now it's in the Vichy stage. I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti in Madhurya Kanamini. He gives a description of the stage and some of the experiences that the person could go through. And some of them are, look at it, you get scared, but you also think there's reality because we go through some of them, in a sense. But to go through that, we obviously need some form of nishtha to still stick with the practice. What kind of nishtha is that called?
It's like, you could say it's a nishtha, you could say it's a shraddha. Yeah. It's probably, really speaking, it's probably more a shraddha. Because, shraddha begins, the first stage, just that initial interest to just go and experience a bit. And then the next is the sadhu sangha, the association. But the association strengthens the shraddha. It's not like, now we've done the shraddha. Okay, that's done. Now we're going to do the sadhu sangha. Shraddha's finished. Now it's the sadhu sangha. And now we're into bhajana kriya. We're really getting committed. So now sadhu sangha falls away also. As you go on to the next stage, the other stages remain, but they become more advanced. So the shraddha becomes more advanced.
So you have the faith to take you through that
stage. Yeah, because you had the sadhu sangha and you saw, wow, look at this Lokanath. Mm-hmm. Wow. Look at this Bhaktadas. My God. What people. I want to become like this. So it's a development of shraddha through association. And then you get into it, now you're practicing bhajana kriya, and now you experience, yes, now I've taken it up, and I'm experiencing what he's experiencing. So it's a shraddha. Yeah.
So if you find weakness in anatta-nivritti, you take shelter of the previous stages as well?
You could say. Take shelter of the devotees, take shelter of the practices, take shelter of scripture, get some good guidance, get some good chastisement. don't keep thinking about this material thing. Give it up. Now you can also say it's a form of nishtha. But real nishtha, when Rupa Goswami refers to nishtha, it's sort of, you could say, a specific thing. It's a specific thing. a you know, more or less unbreakable type of stability in the devotional activities, in the consciousness. Which of course is based on faith. Yeah, the faith has now got stronger. I read many years ago, Prabhupada was saying that Shraddha, in its perfect stage, Shraddha is called prema. Yeah. Because it's always the underlying thing. It's always the underlying thing. It's like the most foundational component is Shraddha. Mature Shraddha, complete Shraddha, means prema. Any other comment or question? Do you have faith? Do you have the Shraddha that prasadam will be nice? Do you have the Shraddha that there will be? Here's the agent of Shraddha.
Guru Maharaj, I heard, I read about it. I don't know whether it's the current Pope or the previous Pope, but his favorite meal is the veal.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I read that too. And he has his own slaughterhouse. And the veal, you know, means the baby cows. It's, you know, it's horrific brutality. It's got nothing, it's not like saintliness with a few problems. You know? Yeah. It's not that. It's just gross, material, brutality, and dead consciousness. To just, you can't see what it is and how it contradicts what you're doing and what you're standing for. And, you know, in his case, what you're meant to be the ultimate emblem of doesn't click. Oh, it's not nice to kill animals. Because it hurts them. Oh, sorry, missed that point. It's shocking, actually. It's shocking. But there's a saying, it's just a joke, for a purpose. 50 million Frenchmen can't be wrong. It's not true. They can be wrong. In other words, just because you put enough people together and they all agree on something doesn't mean it's right. So just because you got all the Catholics or all the Muslims or all the whoever, and they all say, yeah, yeah, it's like that, doesn't mean it's necessarily like that. So they may all think that eating meat is fine, doesn't mean it's fine. Srila Prabhupada ki. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.